Hammond. John Hammond sat down heavily in the damp earth of the hillside and tried to catch his breath. Dear God, it was hot, he thought. Hot and humid. He felt as if he were breathing through a sponge. He looked down at the stream bed, now 40 feet below. It seemed like hours since he had left the trickling water and begun to climb the hill. His ankle was now swollen and dark purple. He couldn't put any weight on it at all. He was forced to hop up the hill on his other leg, which now burned with pain from the exertion. And he was thirsty. Before leaving the stream behind, he had drunk from it, even though he knew this was unwise. Now he felt dizzy, and the world sometimes swirled around him. He was having trouble with his balance, but he knew he had to climb the hill and get back to the path above. Hammond thought he had heard footsteps on the path several times during the previous hour, and each time he had shouted for help, but somehow his voice hadn't carried far enough. He hadn't been rescued. And so, as the afternoon wore on, he began to realize that he would have to climb the hillside, injured leg or not. And that was what he was doing now. Those damn kids! Hammond shook his head, trying to clear it. He had been climbing for more than an hour, and he had gone only a third of the distance up the hill. And he was tired, panting like an old dog. His leg throbbed. He was dizzy. Of course, he knew perfectly well that he was in no danger. He was almost within sight of his bungalow, for God's sake. But he had to admit he was tired. Sitting on the hillside, he found he didn't really want to move anymore. Then why shouldn't he be tired, he thought. He was 76 years old. That was no age to be climbing around hillsides. Even though Hammond was in peak condition for a man his age, personally, he expected to live to be 100. It was just a matter of taking care of yourself, of taking care of things as they came up. Certainly he had plenty of reasons to live, other parks to build, other wonders to create. He heard a squeaking, then a chittering sound, some kind of small birds hopping in the undergrowth. He'd been hearing small animals all afternoon. There were all kinds of things out here, rats, possums, snakes. The squeaking got louder, and small bits of earth rolled down the hillside past him. Something was coming. Then he saw a dark green animal hopping down the hill toward him, and another. Compies, he thought with a chill. Scavengers! The compies didn't look dangerous. They were about as big as chickens, and they moved up and down with little nervous jerks like chickens. But he knew they were poisonous. Their bites had a slow-acting poison that they used to kill crippled animals. Crippled animals, he thought, frowning. The first of the compies perched on the hillside, staring at him. It stayed about 5 feet away beyond his reach, and just watched him. Others came down soon after, and they stood in a row, watching. They hopped up and down and chittered and waved their little clawed hands. Shoo! Get out, he said, and threw a rock. The compies backed away, but only a foot or two. They weren't afraid. They seemed to know he couldn't hurt them. Angrily, Hammond tore a branch from a tree and swiped at them with it. The compies dodged, nipped at the leaves, squeaked happily. They seemed to think he was playing a game. He thought again about the poison. He remembered that one of the animal handlers had been bitten by a compy in a cage. The handler had said the poison was like a narcotic. Peaceful, dreamy, no pain. You just wanted to go to sleep. The hell with that, he thought. Hammond picked up a rock, aimed carefully, and threw it, striking one compy flat in the chest. The little animal shrieked in alarm as it was knocked backward and rolled over its tail. The other animals immediately backed away. Better. Hammond turned away and started to climb the hill once more. Holding branches in both hands, he hopped on his left leg, feeling the ache in his thigh. He had not gone more than 10 feet when one of the compies jumped onto his back. He flung his arms wildly, knocking the animal away, but lost his balance and slid back down the hillside. As he came to a stop, a second compie sprang forward and took a tiny nip from his hand. He looked with horror, seeing the blood flow over his fingers. He turned and began to scramble up the hillside again. Another compie jumped onto his shoulder, and he felt a brief pain as it bit the back of his neck. He shrieked and smacked the animal away. He turned to face the animals, breathing hard, and they stood all around him, hopping up and down and cocking their heads, watching him. From the bite on his neck, he felt warmth flow through his shoulders, down his spine. Lying on his back on the hillside, he began to feel strangely relaxed, detached from himself. But he realized that nothing was wrong. No error had been made. Malcolm was quite incorrect in his analysis. Hammond lay very still, as still as a child in its crib, and he felt wonderfully peaceful. When the next compy came up and bit his ankle, he made only a half-hearted effort to kick it away. The little animals edged closer. Soon they were chittering all around him like excited birds. He raised his head as another compy jumped onto his chest, the animal surprisingly light and delicate. Hammond felt only a slight pain, very slight, as the compy bent to chew his neck.